Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. At the beginning of this podcast, we set out to answer some of the most important questions about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The ideal is that we look and discuss things that happened before, during, and after the assassination that our history books or the Warren Commission didn't tell us. After all, for years the public has been told that there was one shooter, Lee Harvey Oswald, and he fired three shots from the Texas School Book Depository building. He then killed Dallas police officer J.D. Tippit and was running for his life on the streets of Dallas. He was arrested in the Texas theater, supposedly because he didn't buy a ticket to the movie, and then 2 days later he was shot by a lonely nightclub owner named Jack Ruby. The end. But as we have covered in 107 episodes now, there was a lot more to the story than we were told. But still, I get emails almost daily asking me the same question. What if Lee Harvey Oswald really was a lone shooter, and the Warren Commission got it right? What then?
Commission answers unequivocally, Lee Harvey Oswald. Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
The Warren Report has supporters and critics, and neither side is completely right. There are questionable points on both sides. This case is complicated and not straightforward. It is debated for a reason, and the facts are unclear on many of the arguments. So today, we're going to look at arguments that Warren Report defenders would need to believe that would prove that the Warren Commission got it right all along. Believers in the Warren Report argue that Oswald left his job at Jagger's Child Stovall on March 12, 1963 at 10:30 a.m. to mail the rifle order coupon and payment, despite his time card indicating that he was working throughout the morning. Additionally, one must accept that an error occurred, preventing Oswald's money order from being deposited, as there is no bank endorsement on the money order. However, the deposit document claims it was deposited a month prior to Oswald sending the payment.
There's no chain of evidence.
I never could figure out why this guy orders a traceable weapon to this post office box when he's going into any store in Texas, give a phony name, walk out with a rifle which can never be traced.
Frame him, obviously.
There's a lot of smoke there, but there's some fire.
Defenders of the Warren Report would need to believe that Oswald was simply in New Orleans in the summer before the assassination, trying to find work, and he was not there on some sort of mission for intelligence or anyone else. The fact that he was seen with FBI agent Guy Bannister and Clay Shaw, who was a part-time contact of the Domestic Contact Service of the CIA, was just a coincidence. The fact that the address of Guy Bannister's office at 544 Camp Street was stamped on the Fair Play for Cuba leaflets that Oswald was handing out on Canal Street was also a coincidence. Warren Report defenders would need to believe this.
This was in 63.
Sure, Guy Bannister, ex-FBI man, died a couple years ago.
Bannister headed the Chicago office. When he retired, he became a private eye here. I used to have lunch with him. John Birch Society, Minuteman.
Oh, yeah, I remember
right
that.
Right there to the right of Attila the Hun. Used to recruit college students, infiltrate radical organizations on campus. Headed the Anti-Communist League of the Caribbean, all out of this office. Come around here, I want to show you something. See that? Now take a look here. 544 Camp Street. 531 Lafayette Street. Same building, right? But with different addresses and different entrances, both going to the same place, to the office upstairs. Guess who used this address? Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, how do we know he was here? because this office address was stamped on the pro-Castro leaflets he was handing out in the summer of 63 down on Canal Street. Now, these are the same leaflets they found in his garage in Dallas.
What's this? What the hell is this doing on this piece of paper?
After the arrest, 544 Camp Street never appeared on the pamphlets again.
Yes.
He was arrested that day for fighting with some anti-Castro Cubans. But actually, he had contacted them a few days earlier as an ex-Marine trying to join their anti-Castro crusade. When they heard he was now pro-Castro, well, they paid him a visit.
What is this be that shit? You lied to me, you hypocrite! Liar, son of a bitch! People, do not take this paper! This is communist propaganda!
Hey, Collins, come on,
come on, you piece of shit! Go back to Moscow!
There was no real fight, and the arresting lieutenant later said he felt it was a staged incident. In jail, Oswald has a private session with Special Agent John Quigley of the FBI. Oswald is released, and Quigley destroys his notes from the interview. The arrest gets him a lot of publicity, and as a result, Oswald appears on a local TV debate.
But you are a communist.
No, you're not? No, Mr. Bringier. I am not a communist. I'm Marxist-Leninist.
You are not a communist, but you are a Marxist-Leninist? What is the difference?
And here's another one for you. What would you say if I told you the Oswald was trained in the Russian language when he was a Marine?
I say he's probably getting intelligence training.
Well, you were in the Marines. Who would be running that training?
Office of Naval Intelligence.
Take a look across the street.
Post office.
Upstairs in 1963, that was the Office of Naval Intelligence. Just by coincidence, Bannister, before he was FBI, was O&I. Now, what's that little saying they have?
Once O&I, always O&I.
Well, he likes working near his old pals.
Bill, Lou, we are standing in the heart of the United States government's intelligence community here in New Orleans. That's the FBI there. All right? That's the CIA. That's the Secret Service. That's the O&I. Now, doesn't this seem to you a rather strange place for a communist to spend his spare time?
Defenders of the Warren Report would need to believe that Oswald was as good a shooter as some of the best shooters in the world, even though testimony from his military peers and his last shooting test show otherwise. And there is no evidence of him practicing at all before the assassination.
The commission asked three master rifle experts to duplicate Oswald's feat of November 22nd. They failed. Was Oswald more skilled than the commission's experts?
This is an interview with Sergeant Nelson Delgado, who served in the Marine Corps with Lee Harvey Oswald. Sergeant Delgado appeared as a witness before the Warren Commission. Sergeant, prior to your Warren Commission testimony, were you interviewed by agents of the FBI?
Yes, they came to my home in South Jersey to interview me. The first two visits, they came just to get my story, what I knew about Oswald, how close we were, and things like that. After that, then they started, the questions were tending to break my story down.
Sergeant, where are you now stationed?
Down in one of the missile sites in South Jersey. Have been there since prior to the assassination of Kennedy. I've been here now for 3 years, and this month, the 20th to be exact, I'm leaving for Vietnam.
When did you first meet Oswald?
Just prior to the Christmas of 1958, Oswald reported into our unit. Oswald and I got along very good together. We were, like I said, working the same jobs. Involving aircrafts and radar, we controlled them from the ground and ran intercepts.
Was Oswald interested in guns?
They say he was a gun enthusiast, but I recall many instances where we stood inspections and he was constantly being gigged for having a dirty weapon and then taking improper care of his weapon. He was always reminded when he had to clean the weapon, never took it upon himself to do so.
Do you have personal knowledge of Oswald's ability with a rifle?
At the range, he couldn't prove by me that he was a good shot. As any person who's ever served in the armed forces could tell you, there's a part in the qualification that calls for rapid firing. This is done with 10 shots, 8 in a clip and 2 that you load by hand. They give you maybe 45 seconds to be exact to fire these 10 rounds. Well, when you fire these, then you stand away from your firing position until everyone has finished firing. Then the targets are brought down and scored. the targets are run back up and they're dissed for the number that you have hit. Fives, fours, threes, or misses. Well, in Oswald's particular case, it was quite funny to look at, because he would get a couple of discs. Maybe out of the possible 10, he'll get two or three Maggie's drawers. Now, these are a red flag that's on a long pole, and this is running from left to right on the target itself. And you don't see this on a firing line too often, not the Marine firing line. And it's, you can't help but notice it when you're seeing discs, round cylinder things coming up and down, and farther on down the line, you see a flag waving. Well, that was going to catch your eye anyway. And we thought it was funny that Oswald's getting these Maggie's drawers so rapidly, one after the other. And this is why I can't say, think that he would be a good shot, because a good shot doesn't pull this. He'll pull a three, but he won't pull a Maggie's drawer. It's a complete miss.
How did the FBI react to your statement that Oswald was a poor shot?
They tried to disprove this. They did not like the idea when I came up with the statement that Oswald, as far as I knew, Oswald was a very poor shot.
Do you feel that the agents of the FBI actually tried to get you to change your statement that Oswald was a poor shot?
Yes, sir, I definitely do.
Supporters of the Warren Report would argue it is not a concern that the key witness, Buell Wesley Frazier, who claims to have seen Oswald with the package allegedly containing the gun, states that the paper sack presented as evidence is longer and differs from the one he observed. Furthermore, it is not problematic that no witnesses in the building reported seeing Oswald carrying a paper sack or a gun into the building the day of the assassination or any time before.
Who was he carrying the package?
He was carrying the package. One end was under his armpit, and then the other was cupped in his hands. I know it's been said that Lee brought the rifle to work with him that morning. There's no way he could have had the rifle in that package. Because if you had one of these Italian rifles and you took the barrel off the wooden stock, neither one would fit in that package. And I'd said his package was around 2 feet long, give or take an inch or two. There's no way it would fit in there. Now, the question is, how did the rifle get there? I don't know. But he didn't bring it that day.
Defenders of the Warren Report would need to believe that Oswald, while up in the 6th floor southeast corner window of the Texas School Book Depository and the president's car right in front of him, would instead wait until the president's car was moving away from him and a tree was in the way before he fired shots at John F. Kennedy.
Let me ask you something, Lou. Why not just shoot Kennedy coming up Houston? It's plenty of time. He's out in the open.
No, I keep asking myself the same thing.
It's a frontal shot.
Even if you miss him for the first shot, if he accelerates, you still got him for the second shot. No, the only reason for waiting to get him on out is you got him in a triangulated crossfire. If you put a team there on that defense for a frontal shot, flat, low trajectory, put a third team down here in this building here on a low floor, Kennedy gets the kill zone there, it's a turkey shoot.
Supporters of the Warren Report would say that dozens and dozens of witnesses are lying when they say the second and third shots came right on top of each other, which is an impossibility for someone firing a bolt-action Mammoth Carcano, which takes 2.3 seconds to recoil. The FBI tested this and proved it to be true, that it takes that amount of time to recoil the rifle.
The film establishes three shots in 5.6 seconds. See, as the second and third shots came almost right on top of each other, takes a minimum 2.3 seconds to recycle this thing.
Mr. Bowers, how many shots did you hear?
There were three shots, and these were spaced with one shot, then a pause, and then two shots in very close order, such as perhaps almost on top of each other, while there was some pause between the first and the second shots.
Did you tell that to the Dallas police?
Yes, I told this to the police and then also told it to the FBI, and also I had a discussion two or three days later with them concerning this, and they made no comment. other than the fact that when I stated I felt like the second and third shots could not have been fired from the same rifle, they reminded me that I wasn't an expert and I had to agree.
There was a bang, and we all said, what was that? Was that a shot? Was that a backfire? And it was time for us to do a few questions and answers like that, and then there were two shots much closer together. Bang, bang, very close. And I said, those are shots.
How many shots did you hear? I heard three. The first and second were further apart than the second and the third. In other words, that was a bang and a bang, bang like that, you know.
Supporters of the Warren Report would argue that it's not an issue that the only witness who claimed to see Oswald with a gun did not recognize him in a lineup on the day of the assassination.
This is William O'Connell, and we're talking again today about the Warren Commission report on the assassination of President Kennedy. We have in the studio Harold Weisberg, the author of Whitewash, and an even newer book called Whitewash 2, which is subtitled The FBI Secret Service Cover-Up. Mr. Weisberg is a newspaper and magazine writer, former Senate investigator, and also an intelligence and political analyst. One of the things that I especially wanted to go into in treating, as we are now, some of the evidence in the case in great detail and with thoroughness, I wonder if we could examine the reconstructions by the commission of the assassination itself from the depository area on Elm Street, and also the reconstruction that the commission gave to the slaying of Officer Tippit. And to lead into that, I wanted to ask you about a statement that you make and ask how you justify so categoric statement when you say that Oswald could have killed no one.
I add one thing to it, according to the commission's best evidence. And I believe on this subject, the commission's best evidence is quite credible. The commission established Oswald's innocence because of the bankruptcy with which it approached the effort to establish his guilt. Everybody is familiar with the more dramatic aspects of this. For example, the witness, Brennan, perhaps the least credible witness in any official proceeding. This is a man who qualified himself as a witness by saying that he lied when it served his convenience. He was taken to a lineup to identify Oswald, and he is presumably the source of the description. And yet at the lineup, he said he couldn't identify Oswald.
When you say the description, you mean the description that went out over the police radio with reference to a suspect?
Yes.
Now, where was Brennan standing in relation to the depository building?
When we get to Brennan, I will qualify everything by saying, according to.
All right.
Because this is the least credible man in the world.
All right, then instead of beginning with Brennan, let's go back and see if we can.
We've already started with this thing of Brennan, let me finish with that first. Really? Because the reader of the report is led to believe that even though the commission almost disavows him, Brennan is the identifier of Oswald. And Congressman Ford identifies Brennan as the most important witness before the commission.
Defenders of the Warren Commission do not think it's any big deal that no one saw Oswald leave the sixth floor or come down the stairs, even though there were three women on the stairs at the time that would have for sure seen him or heard Oswald coming down the stairs. In order to be seen 90 seconds after the assassination by Building Superintendent Roy Truly and Dallas Police Officer Marion Baker.
Sandra Stiles was working on the fourth floor of the book depository on the day of the assassination. Sandra watched the president's motorcade approach the book depository from her office window.
The motorcade turned left onto Elm Street, and as it got just past the turn, we heard the three shots. The presidential car stopped. We could see Mrs. Kennedy's hot pink suit moving around, and that was about all that we could see. My co-worker, Vicki Adams, said, let's go down and see what's happening.
That would have put Sandra and Vicki in the stairwell at the same time Lee Harvey Oswald should have been racing down the stairs.
While I was in the stairwell, I did not see Lee Harvey Oswald at all.
Sandra's co-worker, Vicki Adams, didn't see Oswald either. Vicki told her story to the Warren Commission in 1964. Then, she disappeared. Author Barry Ernest spent 35 years tracking her down.
When I located her, Vicki told me she feared for her life because her account seriously undermined the commission's conclusion that Oswald had fired from the sixth floor.
Next week on The End of Innocence, the JFK assassination, we continue to look at what Warren Report defenders and supporters must believe in order to say that Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone assassin or an assassin at all in the death of President John F. Kennedy. This week we only scratched the surface. Wait till you hear what we have for you next week. If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon, or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. In honor of the release of the JFK assassination records, I'm sending out signed copies of my book. If you would like one of these, please email me at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. The price is $40 for the soft cover and $60 for the hardcover, plus shipping and handling. I can promise you, you won't be disappointed in the book. It's an oversized coffee table style book. The book is over 500 pages with almost 1,000 pictures. You won't be disappointed. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. We'll see you next week.